Hey, I'm Corey Grushka, the founder of Stories Bureau, a creative agency that specializes in storytelling and multimedia creative for all things insights.
And I'm Simrat Sarin, a marketing expert with over 15 years' experience in helping the biggest brands create true memories.
I want to inspire you to think bigger, broader, and more creatively.
And I want to push you to make you think and go beyond the job description.
Let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of the Inspiring Insights podcast. For posterity's sake, I'll say we're broadcasting live at IAX North America here in Austin, Texas. For those that don't know, the Inspiring Insights podcast is a podcast where we seek to inspire the insights industry with conversations that are going to cover the present and the future of the insight space, but specifically with a lens on storytelling and driving change through insights. And we hope in the process we'll bring a perspective and a new voice to the industry. And speaking of a new perspective, I am an outsider to the insights industry. My name is Corey Grushka, and I'm the CEO and creative director of Stories Bureau. We're a creative agency that socializes and basically makes insights more impactful in all the ways that you probably know about and some ways that you might not.
And I'm Simrat Sarin. I'm the head of client solutions at NeuroInsight. We are a neuroanalytics company that specializes in understanding the deepest drivers of human subconscious and decision making. And I have the good fortune of introducing an old friend of mine who probably started her journey 8,000 miles ago into the world of insights, launching media plans when these things were not heard of, developing brands in very distinctive ways, coming into a range of different agencies, advising clients, and ultimately making her journey back into the client side in the world of tech in Silicon Valley. So with me is Aarti, and it's such a pleasure to have you.
Well, what a setup. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. I head the global research and insights function at Snapchat. And you're right, I started my career first all the way in India, where I was doing a lot of audience insights and market entry kind of research, because that was a time when a lot of brands were coming into the country, whether it was Microsoft testing smart wallet before wallet was a thing.
Wow.
Back in feature phones, I'm dating myself, to Mars trying to launch Snickers in the country. After a few years, moved to Singapore, did a lot of brand and creator work, where I got to work with cool brands across the PepsiCo portfolio, Friesland Campina, which is the second largest dairy company. And then I thought, had enough time in Asia. I wanted to move to other parts of the world, and North America was calling. It was more of a personal move to move to Canada. And I did a complete switch and worked at Mediacom, heading their insights function. So this was my first entry into the world of media and media effectiveness, media measurement, and how people are actually spending the money and looking at ROI. Did that for a few years, still interested in the space, but wanted to move to a bigger market, and got an opportunity to work in the US for the Vesco. So worked a lot of clients, including Snap, TikTok, Microsoft again, LinkedIn. And Snap was a great account to work on. And when the opportunity to work for the company came up, I grabbed it. And now I think, I'm privileged to be in a position where I do a little bit of everything. So audience understanding, to positioning, to ad effectiveness. And a lot of the work that I do is external facing. So we produce a lot of thought leadership, arm sales, we are at conferences, publish blog posts. So it stretches my skills beyond insights and go to market with it.
I think it's fascinating the fact that you do get to speak to audiences externally with insights, as well as obviously internally. I want to ask you a question about the experience that you had across market maturity levels, across cultures. How has that informed your point of view on the insights function, the work you do as an insights leader as well?
What has helped me in working in different markets is to really hone my empathy skill and to be able to put yourself in any shoe, whether it's a pair of boots in the US to sandals in Singapore, And I think often we write insights starting from how we design a study to even a questionnaire or whatever it is, instrument you want to use, through our eyes and what we think a consumer wants. But what I think working in all these markets has given me is the fact that the consumer wants different things. Even the way you think about is very different. And therefore, the way you read the data is also very different. A very simple example is, and I did this work for a huge CPG firm called FMCG in UK, where they're looking at transference of creatives across markets. Ads are different. So in Thailand, for example, you know, everybody's always going to say yes. So percentage agree or think it's a great ad is going to be 90%. In Hong Kong, the same ad will be 10% because the judging there is very harsh. So even reading the numbers requires, you know, you to be aware that different cultures respond to questions differently. And I hope that's what I bring to my team now, because we are a global team. We work across, and I have people in 6 different time zones, from Dubai to LA. So it's nice to hear their perspectives, but also every time they write something, I'm like, are you sure that's applicable to the market that you're talking about? So having that sense of awareness, I think, is, you know, one of the benefits I feel like I have working in all these markets.
Supporting the early days of the consumer marketplace in India, what was that like in an insights function when, you know, Mars hadn't even introduced Snickers yet? That was early days, I take it, overall for this industry in that emerging market.
Yeah, I always say that I was lucky enough to have entered the industry. It was straight out of university. I got recruited off campus. Didn't have any idea what market research is. I think none of us do when we enter the industry. We're like, oh, you get to work with, you know, brands, and you ask questions, and you get to travel. I'm like, okay. And then you join, and it was like early 2000s. A lot of brands were entering the country. And then the established brands like Unilevers of the world were done with the cities and wanted to move to the smaller towns. It's an entirely different ballgame. So in a way, it was for me almost like discovering the country state by state, and it kind of helped set the stage for me to be a global researcher, because I always feel like India is like Europe. Every state is different, culture is different, language is different. So, you know, even in one study, I have to think about it in 16 different languages. And traveling the length and breadth of the country, you know, trying to do packaging testing to smart wallet in rural areas, you know. So it was very educational. We worked with so many different categories, so I had a lot of exposure. And I was lucky enough, my first boss was super amazing. I learned the foundation of research. And this was a time when we were switching from face-to-face interview to computer-aided, oh my God, I sound so old, to online interviewing. So even understanding how to sample representatively 10 villages in a rural area, right? So I learned a lot of fundamentals of research from there that I think is necessary today. And I don't think every new researcher who comes into the business actually has it and is being taught that. So I'm glad I did. Gave me an education of what research is, which I think is necessary for us to think more strategically about how research is being used.
Pivoting quickly from research to how research is being applied, so how from conducting to actually applied, Snap has been on a very unique journey. Started off as the darling of Silicon Valley, comes out and everyone's on it, like this is the new thing.
It was on a TikTok trajectory in the early days, I feel like.
I remember Taco Bell being a case study on every marketing conference, where how Taco Bell's basically taken over Snap and built their brand. And that's how Taco Bell established itself as a millennial brand. From there, it became, oh, this is only for kids. Then all of a sudden, it goes through another golden period for a few seconds, and then it starts to find difficult times again. But Snap isn't the same way it is in the US elsewhere. I'd love to understand how you, as the leader of the insights team, is helping push the company forward and building growth back into the company.
Excellent question. I like to believe we're driving growth back into the company.
Absolutely, yeah.
At least I hope we're educating people about what they need to do so they're taking more informed decisions. You're very right. You know, Snap's used in different ways in different markets. And even that education is needed, because most of the decisions is taken like at a global level. We can't have different strategies for this app in terms of marketing and positioning. You need that one positioning. But how you execute in each market would be slightly different. But how can it be different is where I think insights, you know, informs it. I have had such a fun time learning about Snap as I started working at the company.
Do you want to share some cool facts about Snap?
Sure. So I was, when I first joined, surprised by the usage in Middle East. You know, our reach is phenomenal there. It's one of our fastest growing market. And the way people talk about Snap is so different in the market. They use it for everything, and everybody of all ages, you know, use it for communication, and it's such a rich playground for creators, They do a lot of shopping, they share stuff, lens usage is very high. The way that it's used is so different there. And Norway as well. Norway is like the chief source of communication. Like chat is, you know, it's used so often in that market. And then you come to US where, yes, it originally started out as the app for the youth, and it still remains. About 90% of Gen Z, so those who are between 13 to 24, are on Snapchat. But it doesn't mean that we're only Gen Z. Because a lot of the people who were younger like a decade ago, because Snap's more than 10 years now, we are like aging up, they have also aged up with the app. So now we have this mix of, yes, kids going to college, first job, I've got married, I have kids now, and then parents who are coming into the app through their kids, right? It's the primary way to communicate.
Is that happening a lot? My perception of Snap is that it still over-indexes on like...
Yeah, and that's a common perception that, you know, we try to correct. Like about what, 50% of our audiences are over 25. Mm. But 90% of Gen Z are on Snap. So it's always like, yes, the younger, you know, people are there, but the older people are also on the app. And again, that kind of varies by market as well. And like Saudi is a great example where literally everybody's on the app, regardless of the age. And then you have like an emerging market like India, because Snap is only now growing the Indian market. And the entry to Snap in that market is through the camera, which has all the lenses. And a lot of people are using those lenses to create videos and sharing. And that's how they're getting introduced to Snap, which is fascinating to see. Whereas in the US, it grew as a chat app that also has a lot of functionality. It still opens up to a camera. It's still very much like a visual platform. And I also like the fact that, you know, the way you think about strategy for Snap is very different, because it's not about, you're not building huge follower base. It's not about likes, not about, you know, comments. It's really about community and connection. And how do you take that and make it into a monetizable app is fascinating for me. It also means that the way people think about ads on the platform is different, which is what I'm discovering. And these are the things I need to communicate to the decision makers within the company.
I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I'll put words in your mouth. I told you this, but I heard you on another podcast talk about the kind of the happiness factor on Snap versus maybe some other social platforms, and how much, you know, like people are in... Relatively siloed communities of the people that they know. They're not exposed to everybody else. They're not out for vanity metrics. And I just have to say, like, I'll be the evangelist for Snap for 5 seconds. Like, I don't love social media. I have a daughter that's already on social media. And it was really cool and refreshing to hear. I didn't think that was going to be the case. People are happy on it, huh? That's cool.
Yeah. And that'll be like a plug for Samrat, because
I was going to say,
we did the research.
Yeah, that was the work we did.
Awesome.
Thank you, Cohen.
Yeah, I love that.
It was one of those things, you know, we had a hypothesis. We were like, is this true or not? Let's find out. That's one of the more terrifying aspects of my job. You know, I have to do all this external thought leadership, but every time I do a study, I'm like, I hope it tells us what we want, and I hope I discover something new that's interesting that, you know, helps me with my story, but you never know. So we had a hypothesis, we had a hunch that perhaps people are more happier on the platform because, you know, they're not chasing the vanity. It's also because you're on the platform connecting with your closest family and friends. And that's the mindset, you know, we hope people went into while opening the app. And that's what we proved through the research. And then if you're in that happier mindset, I think it puts you in a better mindset to be receiving brand messaging. The other thing I also like about the app is it's like privacy by default. So all of the settings when you sign on are like pro privacy. You don't have to go change privacy settings after, unless you want, you know, like your snaps to be saved for 24 hours. Then you go have to set it. Otherwise, it does go away in those, you know, 6 to 7 seconds. So it was designed that way, and I'm glad it still stays that way. And that, I think, is beneficial for users, which ultimately benefits advertisers.
How do you communicate the story in a simple way to an audience within seconds? And I think this is where the power of storytelling becomes extremely important. Adi, over the years that you have been doing this work, how have you seen people evolve in their receptivity to data and the kind of stories that need to be told now? Mm-hmm. How has that changed from the past?
I'm going to get on a soapbox because one of my favorite things to talk about, right? It is very true of consumers. It's also true of people in business that attention spans are declining. People just don't have the time, right? I mean, even look at us. As we are talking, there'll be emails to check, there'll be messages to respond to. So if I don't hit you with the message in, like, technically it's 7 seconds, or I don't know if that research is actually true or not. However, if I don't get you and hit you with a message in a few minutes, I've kind of lost you. And a lot of people are now becoming very action-oriented. Like, just tell me what to do, and, you know, then we will talk about the story. So I think the way we are telling stories are, like, kind of changing. Because earlier, I always feel like research used to be, this is what we have done. These are all the findings. Let me take you on the journey. And ta-da, this is what you need to do. And nobody has the time for that anymore. And we almost start with, these are the 3 things we have learned. I'm going to tell you why. Do you agree or not? Let's discuss. So I feel like the way we are telling stories has changed. And I also think, you know, we no longer are doing, like, your 50 sliders where you have to show every data point to prove the story that you're saying, right? It's become more succinct.
And it's very hard for people.
It is.
Especially in the insight space, I can vouch.
You know, as researchers, we want to show all the work that
exactly.
we have done to come to a data point.
But it's also that old adage, right? Like, I could have written a shorter email, but I didn't have enough time.
It's true.
Yeah,
that's curating is hard.
It is. And yeah. I also say, like, always know your audience. And I think we miss that a lot. We write for an end audience who would think we appreciate all the work that we do. But most often, especially, you know, if you're presenting to marketers, or you're presenting to, I present to even engineers and ads monetization, right? To them, you have to enthrall them with the story, but that very clearly tells them so what and then now what, and do it quickly. That's what I've seen change over the years. And I don't know whether part of it is also cultural, because I've moved countries over the years as well. Like, in Asia, you have to show the proof, right? I used to present a Pepsi from, like, Pakistan up to Korea and all in between. And, you know, if you go to markets like Vietnam, and you tell them, this is what you need to do to the brand because we found this, they'll be like, no. Tell me how. Show me how. And you have to show all the data. But I think we've kind of moved on from that to just tell me what I need to do because I trust your expertise. But it's also, you have to, like, showcase your expertise in the stories that you say.
What you're doing now in terms of communicating to internal audiences, not just the value of insights, but the work itself, but then also to external audiences, because you're trying to bring brands online, right?
And, yep.
and on the external side, you're doing the same thing. You're communicating your research findings. You're, like, curating data, as we're talking about, but you're also getting, imagine you're putting paid media behind it and you're kind of running campaigns around it. What works in terms of communicating? Because it's cool to kind of, you don't get any data when you present to the CMO, right? Or when you present to whomever.
You get feedback, but yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen particular things that work in your white papers or infographics, whatever it is you do, in terms of communicating the research itself and the value prop and so forth? You know what I mean?
I think we're in the age where everybody has to show value. So as a team, whatever we put out, we try to, like, track the impact of it. Sometimes it's not so direct. It's not like we directly say, because of this, that campaign was booked and I made $2 million. But we do track some behavioral elements on our blogs, like views and, you know, time spent and so on, and try to analyze what kind of content led to more engagement and so on. We get a lot of feedback from sales when they take out the materials that we produce and speak to clients, and you're challenging a little bit of the stereotypes that they have, and you're delivering some new news. Like, one of the most engaging pieces that we wrote was about challenging some of the nuances people have around Gen Z and proving that, yes, you're right about some things, but perhaps you're wrong about something. But we wrote it in, like, a fun way. That engagement was, like, very high. So I think when you surprise people a bit, there's a lot of engagement. And when you simplify complex findings, the study that we did was complicated. You know, it was multi-stage, lots of analysis. But when you drill
metrics
it down...
Metrics people don't understand.
Exactly. But when you simplify, I always say, explain it like you are to a 7-year-old. Right? When you bring it down to that level, then it works. And then people are like, some appreciate then all the work that's gone behind it. They're like, oh, I didn't know that you linked this to this to this. But we took them through, like, a story and say, and don't you agree?
And one thing that I found fascinating, and it's been a consistent surprise always, is that there's never one form of storytelling. you think, hey, hit them up with the right facts, tell them what to do, and that's done. And people will tell you, you're missing the story. You didn't inspire me. Inspire them, they'll say, get to the point.
Yeah.
Get to the point, and they'll be like, where's the methodology? And it's almost as if you, you know, when you learn ballroom dancing or you learn one any of those dances.
Do ballroom dancing?
Dude, I do everything.
Oh, man.
And you, yeah. And you get up on stage and you have a partner that you've never danced with and you're supposed to go impromptu with them. It's all about feeling the beat and moving with it.
Yeah.
To me, I feel like the biggest challenge has been people are very scripted within our world.
Mm.
They love to follow a script and they think it's a play. And it's not a play, it's an improv.
The reason they do that is because there's risk if you don't follow the script, right? If you go off script, if you curate, if you eliminate and focus in on an area that maybe is unscripted, now you're taking on risk. You're taking a position, right? You're staking a claim, which is like, well, if I just show you everything and I don't really take a position, it's kind of on you what you do with it, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. You kind of remove the risk. And I'm like, then what is your role?
Exactly.
You know? But I think the improv should be on a bedrock of preparation.
Absolutely.
And that's why I say know your audience. And I've learned that through very, very hard lessons. Because I remember early in my career, maybe like about 7-8 years in my career, I was in charge of running all of like brand tracking and creative evaluation for Fonterra, which is in Asia Pacific, the largest dairy brand for Sri Lanka. So every quarter we used to fly there. The entire marketing team will be sitting. It was a formidable bunch, and you have to present. And the first time I was presenting to the CMO, and I said something like, oh, the brand's declining. These are the reasons. She's like, hold on. Go back to the slide. Why did you say declining? I was not like quick on my feet to respond because I had my story. I'm like, I'm going to tell you the decline. I'm going to tell you the reasons. I'm going to tell you what you have to do. And that's when I learned I didn't know the audience. That woman had 5 minutes, and you had to like get to the point for her. But the brand team wanted to know all the why. So that's where I think the improv comes in, like knowing your audience so you don't stick to your script.
Exactly.
You kind of adjust based on who you're talking to in the situation. Or read the room. Like sometimes when I'm presenting, I just see dead faces and no engagement. I'm like, okay, I need to switch it up. And I'll skip through some slides, or I'll be like, I'll stop and say, any questions, and let's, have this session. And I feel like a lot of insights now also requires other skills, right? Whether it is like a lot of the softer skills and having the EQ.
Understanding the business. We just talked to Stefania about this. I mean, like the idea of being able to communicate with executives and understand how executives perceive insights, what they're looking for in terms of like what is value to an executive that's taking 10 minutes to listen to what you have to say,
Putting in a key point here is like Insights is no longer a single dimensional organization that is required to go research and produce data.
Yep.
I think that was a role way back in the day. Insights today, at least from what I am seeing, the most effective agencies within the brand world are the ones that think of themselves as solutions organization. We have been charged to go and find a solution to a problem that nobody else can solve.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to do it with data and align the organization. It's almost like when you think about a beehive, 80% of the bees go to collect nectar from the same place. 20% of the bees have been sent, regardless of how much honey there's where they're going, to go and find new places. That's the insights organization of tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which means that, to your point, you need to not only be able to pick up what's happening, you need to be able to figure out what the solutions are going to be. Test the solutions, be able to come back to senior management and say, I'm giving you what you need to operationalize.
Mm-hmm.
I am not giving you things to think about.
Yep. It's being more proactive than reactive. I feel like that's another easy trap insights functions can fall into.
Totally.
Just waiting for like marketing,
for
say,
assignment.
I want to do this.
Yep.
I hate it.
Yep.
So I tell my team, if anybody asks you for an insight or a stat, like tell them we're not Google search,
ChatGPT.
or all other brands out there. And tell them what's your problem. And sometimes people don't know what the problem is. So every 6 months as a team, we actually get together and think about what should the company be thinking about. And then we go pitch the idea out to our cross-functional partners and get the interest and do stuff. So I feel like that also helps in keeping insights relevant within an organization. Otherwise, you're just seen as an executor.
For sure.
But not somebody,
Exactly.
Who's bringing something to the table.
I want to pivot us a little bit, because I think we'd be remiss if we don't go into, I mean, we're sitting in front of somebody at Snap, we got to go into augmented reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, but before we do, I would love to hear from you, from a brand perspective, what are the, I guess, product features, what is available to a brand from an augmented reality perspective?
Well, the simplest way to explain it is when you open up Snap, it opens to the camera, and in the camera is a lens carousel. And essentially, in that lens experience can be branded. And now there's so much sophistication in the technology that you can do a very simple filter lens where you just put like a border and the brand name and you can take an image and engage with it, to a very sophisticated game playing. You can have like the digital overlay on the face of the consumer or on the world. Or you can build these, there's a unit within Snap called Arcadia. They are like the creative division who create these bespoke lenses. And, you know, including they did like an exhibition with Vogue where they took people
what?
Through...
What? What did you say?
Exhibition with Vogue, the fashion magazine, where they took people through history of costumes and you could try on the costume.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's very imaginative as a ad unit, right, within the app. And it also now has application outside as well. It's highly engaging. Like I told you, you can keep it as simple as one click or an entire game people can play for like 30 seconds.
And the data that the brands are getting is tremendous out of it?
I would say like use it as part of like your multi-product campaign. You have display, you have video, you have lenses, and use it as a means to land your message and get people to discover more about the brand. We've done a lot of research around that. That shows that AR has the power to actually change what people think about a brand. And it has like the power to drive lower funnel, because now there are a lot of lenses for selling. So you could try on lens. So you could like try on sneakers or jewelry, and then there's a shop button and you click it and you can actually shop the product. You try on glasses, frames. You now have to go to a store to try, you know, glasses on. So it's got a very practical application as well.
And it's great at top of funnel too. I mean, for awareness, yeah. Like from a brand building perspective, it's like a guerrilla activation.
Yeah, we always say it like supercharges your video and the platform. So what we have typically seen, we've done a lot of work around attention paid to lenses as well. And, you know, one number that always sticks my mind is they say that one lens experience, so one impression of a lens, garners as much attention as about 14 to 20 impressions of a video ad on other platforms. So that's the kind of power that the unit has. And on top of it, if you build the right lens, you can actually drive somebody to action as well.
What are some other examples that you all kick around internally or externally of like the best in class stuff that is trying on the costumes sounds pretty cool. What are there must be other things that people are like, wow, these people.
Yeah, there's like so many great examples of lenses that drove business and that inspired people. You know, there was an entire campaign, I believe, that NHS, we worked with NHS, where they showed how blood donation works to drive donation. So there's a lot of educational health application for lenses. Now there are categories like travel and automotive are also entering it. So you could see the inside of a car.
Interesting, that's cool.
You could see a hotel room before you book it, right? Or you could like open up, Dubai Travel did it during COVID to keep Dubai as a, you know, travel destination alive in people's head. You could visit the various, you know, famous places in Dubai, kind of experience how it looks and feels and so on. So the application is only growing. Traditionally, it was more CPG, like your personal care beauty, trying on lipstick and, you know, eyeliner, those kind of things.
IKEA couches.
To retail, you know, and now more and more categories are actually using or dabbling in this format, which is not as, I would say, like resource intensive as virtual reality and building a whole new world.
The funny part is that with augmented reality, what people don't realize is like when you close your eyes and you imagine something, the same parts of the brain are stimulated as if you were actually seeing it. And you can mirror emotions that you once felt. And with augmented reality, you have the added advantage of being able to see it. So when you're seeing that sneaker through the lens on your foot, it's almost as if...
It's on your foot, yeah.
It's on your foot. So it's one step in the conversion funnel that has been removed.
It's cool.
But to your point, like brands have not really spent the time or invested in actually understanding that as much as they should have. I felt augmented reality would have been much bigger because it's been around since 2010.
Yeah, Yeah, it has. And I think, you know, especially over the last few years, technology has improved so much. Like every quarter, you know, we would see all the updates that happens to the product. I think last year they released something called ray tracing, which basically means you're creating shadows on the 3D objects. And I'm like, why is this such a big release? But it adds such a lens of realism, you know, to the products I design, and that takes so much engineering work. Mm. So I feel like it's gotten so much better. So maybe somebody, I don't know, 10 years ago tried Lens, it was a clunky experience, but now it's gotten so much more better. And I feel a lot of brands don't think about it because, you know, unfortunately, it's still, you know, the way they plan is very siloed, you know, in terms of I will do linear TV, I'll do digital, I'll do social, or I'll do video, I'll display and innovation. But what you nearly think about is what's the consumer experience, mm-hmm. and what are consumers looking for. And I think there's a lot of preconceived notion on it's quite expensive to develop a lens and I don't know where to start and, you know, those kind of things. So I don't have the time because often creatives come in so late.
AI, there's an app for that.
But we're seeing a lot of, you know, clients leaning in and trying to build like cool lens experiences. I think the NYX Beauty Bestie is a great one of where it's an interactive lens that lets you choose different makeup looks based on how you're feeling. So it acts as an expert and it chooses different stuff for you. You know, those kind of experiences are pretty cool and it's nice to see brands leaning in, but you know, love to see more.
Did you, your thing about like you try on a shoe on Snapchat and it's like you're wearing it. Did you all try the Apple Vision Pro yet?
No.
Put that on? So you can walk into an Apple store and just put your name down and it is bananas, first of all. It is fully immersive. I mean, like, there's very little lag. It's, like, photorealistic. But the killer thing is the AR piece. I mean, it's not just on a phone AR, you know. It's now going to be, and then it's $3,500. It's going to be $1,000 at some point.
Yeah.
At most, you know, a lot of people will have them, and it's going to, AR is, you already see like zombies, you know, the social videos of zombies walking around with the headset, like down in the street in New York City.
Is that what's coming out next, Arti? Is a Snap AR
headset? Well, they have the glasses?
Spectacles, yeah. The spectacles are still around. I think the wearables need to be perfected with weight versus battery life versus quality, and I don't know when that'll happen.
The Vision Pro was a leap forward, I think. You should try.
I would think so, from the company that's, you know, known to make great hardware.
yeah.
One last question for you, because we were talking about AR. You have probably one of the most interesting jobs in the world with Snap, because you're working with a technology that's so cool, so new, so interesting in the way that it delivers information. How have you used Snapchat to disseminate insights within the organization?
We have. So usually when we think about how we roll out, just like you have a research plan, I have a go-to-market plan for every one of the studies that we do.
Nice.
Right? Because often what, you know, again, this is what I've learned over the years, is we work towards this big deadline, do a report, and we're like, done, moving on. But that's not the case. You know, what we do actually has a shelf life of a year, year and a half, minimum. So one of the most fun go-to-market plans was, this was with a large holding company, and we did the study for around AR and how people are starting to use AR in their shopping process. And we decided to release the study at Cannes. So we did a mix of like very exclusive client event where they could, you know, come and actually experience. Some of our lenses are these huge AR mirrors. They're like life size. So come and experience few of those as they walked into the room to, you know, have a more, what we say, traditional dissemination of knowledge. It's kind of like a presentation and a panel discussion and so on. And at the end of it, they could scan a Snap code and they have to like go through a little game answering some of the facts that was shared in the presentation and then order their own product off of that lens, which is like a bucket hat. So this was like a nice way to mix, you know, traditional ways of sharing knowledge, which still I think is very strong. Like nothing beats a face-to-face chat and, you know, me sharing things I've learned with actually using the technology in dissemination of insights. and the lens was supposed to stay within the event, and it went viral and it got over 53 million impressions.
Wow.
This day we don't know how. So apparently there's legs to do, you know, research.
Yeah.
research on a lens.
With Snap and with a lot of the platforms, when you create 2-minute, 3-minute pieces of content and you just throw it out there, it changes people's perceptions. Because at that point you intercept people at different times when they have different moods. So some people are like, I want the full thing.
Yep.
But some people are like, I just want the 3-minute version. Some people are like, I just want to learn about one small thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have those videos and it just flows like a story, it's almost like a movie that you're watching.
Totally. Look, I think we're almost at time. I don't know if there is going to be a Q&A. I think there is going to be a Q&A, but maybe we talk through it. But listen, Arti, I have a bunch of other questions that we're not going to get to, but I really appreciate your time. I really enjoyed hearing the story. It's a fascinating story across markets, across cultures, across disciplines. You're doing awesome stuff and really appreciate you being on.
Thank you so much. Thank you for this fascinating conversation and for having me on your podcast.
Absolutely. Just one last question. Any new releases we should know about?
Just between us.
Well, maybe after the podcast. No. We have a Snap New Fronts and Partner Summit that's happening, one in May and one in September, where we will share new releases.
There you go.
Sticking to the company line.
Thanks again.
I was like, hold on a second. What?
All right.
Thank you.
Inspiring Insights is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexander Uresta with help from Mather De Leon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and was edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you're into the show, why not follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, where you'll also find Corey and Samrat. And visit storiesbureau.com to learn more about how we tell stories that empower insights for companies all over the world. We'll be back in a month with another insightful conversation that'll inspire you to go beyond the job description. Until then, thanks for listening.